Right, we will fade down Joe Walsh because my guest has arrived into the studio. It is the lovely Russell Quirk. Don't look at me like that. Is it cold in here?
It's a little chilly, but yeah, you've got over-efficient air conditioning, I think.
Yeah, we have to do that to keep everything cool in here when we get such hot guests into the studio.
Oh, nice. I'm flattered.
Now, you're in the studio today. I've been talking about it this morning, and obviously, if you want to get involved with the show during the show, you can email radio@phoenixfm.com. And then just to say at the beginning of this, is there any other councillors from any other parties that would like to come in and talk on air on my show, or they want to come in on the political show that I know that you normally would do a Wednesday, political show with Mike, you're more than welcome. So don't think that you can't be involved. We have you all.
You actively encourage it, don't you?
So that's radio@phoenixfm. Do get in contact. Now, you're in today to talk about your councillor. I did like this. Is your councillor a worker or a shirker?
Yes, and I think many residents, probably not just in Brentwood, actually wonder what their councillor does.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, I have my own view on that with regard to my knowledge, I suppose, of various councillors, particularly the ones that speak in the chamber, the ones that don't speak, of which there are many. But there's another demonstrable way of trying to find out which councillors are actually putting their weight, which councillors are earning their keep, if you like. Because don't forget, you know, no councillor gets rich on their allowance that they get, but they do receive a taxpayer-funded allowance of about £7,000 per annum, plus any special responsibility allowances that they get for being leader, deputy leader, chairman of a committee, etc. So, you know, some of them, the leader of the council is on £23,000-24,000. You know, in the scheme of things, it's not massive money. However, you know, as a humble councillor with no special responsibilities on £7,000 a year, it's still £7,000 of taxpayers' money, which I think has to be justified.
Yeah, definitely.
So I put in a request a few days ago and got the answer back fairly quickly, actually, which is unusual for the council, whereby I've asked for a list of councillors and the casework that they're responsible for. Now, casework is the work that a councillor does behind the scenes to represent their residents based on residents approaching them for things like housing issues, planning issues, fly tipping. You know, it could be anything that the council is responsible for, you know, broken play equipment, whatever it might be. People's port of call tends to be to their councillor. The councillor then behind the scenes goes to officers within the council through what's called a member casework system. And it's actually quite a robust system, very measurable. So what I do as a councillor, once I get contacted through whatever means, you know, whether it be an email, a phone call, Twitter, actually, is quite growing actually in popularity from the public's point of view in terms of a means of contacting the councillor. So I then, as other councillors do, we go to this member casework system and we put in a request for an officer to look at the problem. So let's say, for instance, we had an issue on the border of Shenfield and Hutton a few weeks ago about pigeons, would you believe, congregating on a bridge.
Was it suicide or something? Be careful.
No, I think they were happy pigeons.
All right,
so happy they were making quite a mess on the road underneath.
Yep.
And that was the issue. So, you know, I raised that as an issue. It then got picked up by the legal officers within the council because there was an issue then in terms of who owns the bridge and they're responsible for it and so on, but also the environmental officers and so on. Anyway, so the
whole... Is it kind of like if you were getting in contact with the police, if somebody broke into your car, you get a crime number? It's kind of like taking it to the next, rather than just sort of sitting it on your desk.
Same process.
Logged.
Exactly. It's logged and it's measurable and, you know, and it works very well. The officers then respond and, you know, the councillor then knows what's going on behind the scenes and he can report back to his resident, and hopefully at the end of it, you end up with a situation where that particular issue is resolved. So anyway, I put in a request of all 37 councillors to find out what they were doing and just to see which councillors were working and which councillors were shirking. And you've got the list in front of you.
I have the list in front of me.
There's a bit of a difference.
There is a little bit of a difference. We've got which is a zero, which we'll mention those fellows in a minute. And at the top we've got 155 dealt with. That's William Lloyd is the worker, not a shirker.
He's very much a worker. And he can't hear this because he's away. He's in Bournemouth on a holiday.
So, he comes back.
But he's William Lloyd. He's Brentwood First group leader. He's one of the four councillors, including me, that moved away from the Conservatives a few months ago and obviously set up and did our own thing. And actually looking at this list, thank goodness we did. Further justification of why we've moved away from the Conservative administration, I have to say. So, this is, and bearing in mind, this is a list from the 1st of January up to the 31st of July. So it's a full 7 months. And it catalogues exactly what each councillor has been doing. There's not a lot of hiding away from this, really.
No.
You know, particularly when the numbers are so disparate, if you like, between William Lloyd at the top, 155. Karen Chilvers actually is the Liberal Democrat councillor for Brentwood West. She's on 146 cases that she's dealt with from since the 1st of January. Julie Morris is next. She's the Labour councillor for Brentwood South. Vicky Davis, who is a Pilgrim's Hatch councillor for a Liberal Democrats. Mike the Surf is next. Again, another Labour councillor for Brentwood South. See, there's a pattern emerging here. Hmm. The top five, I have to say, try not to be biased here, the top five are all opposition councillors, not a Conservative amongst them.
Yeah.
The top Conservative is Louise McKinley. She's the leader of the council. She's on a very admirable 43. She does work hard for a ward. There is absolutely no question about that. And I'm her fellow ward councillor there. I'm 11th, by the way,
which
I'm okay with, you know. But I think the story is, as you get to the bottom of the list, really, the bottom 12 councillors are all Conservatives.
Yeah.
So the 12 worst councillors for actually responding to residents, doing the job that they're supposed to be doing in terms of picking up issues and seeing them through on behalf of the residents that elect them, the bottom 12 are all Conservatives. Now, Conservatives make up 61% of the council. So for the bottom 12 to all be Conservatives is actually quite surprising, really, because, you know, there should be a mix. It should, you would argue, I would argue, there should be no difference, really, between a Liberal Democrat and a Conservative in terms of the amount of casework that is put their way, the amount of people that go to them for help. But as you drill further down into these figures, it's remarkable, really, that there's actually five councillors in that bottom 12 that have registered a grand total of zero.
Now, I did say to you just off air, could it be that, you know, when I first said, could it be that nobody's said anything to them? Nobody's been knocking on their door saying, can you help me with something? But as you explained, the areas that they kind of, it would be quite doubtful, really.
Big areas.
January to now.
Let's name them. You've got Roger McShane. He's a Conservative councillor for Doddinghurst, obviously covers Navestock and Kelwood and Hatch and so on. He's registered zero cases on behalf of his residents. Alan Braid, who is one of the councillors for Hutton Central, he has also registered zero. Now, in fairness to Alan, now I know, you know, he's retired but a busy guy. You know, I know when we used to knock on his door and ask him to come out help to help us canvass and campaign at election time, you know, he'd always have the builders in, or he was, you know, going off to play bridge. And in fact, I think the Brentwood Gazette criticised him fairly recently for not helping a resident because he was out playing bridge. He's, bless him, got to get your priorities right, haven't you? And also doesn't have email. So if you try to email him, or I don't even know if he's got a phone at home, I don't know if he's perhaps, you know, that technology sort of landed on his lap yet. But so, you know, clearly not particularly accessible. Claire Cornell, another Hutton Conservative councillor. Madeline Hemwood, who's now the mayor, although, but she has only been mayor since end of May. Zero cases. And Noel Holmes, who's one of the three Ingatestone councillors, who also has very proudly registered no help for her residents since January the 1st. Ingatestone actually is quite interesting. There's three councillors for Ingatestone. There's Keith Sparling, Tony Sleep and Madeline Hemwood. Ingatestone, and hopefully you might even get some calls and emails saying that I'm wrong here, but I'm assuming it's a very, very quiet place with no problems whatsoever. Because in seven months, there have only been a grand total of four cases registered by all three Ingatestone councillors. So there's only been four issues of a planning, housing, recycling, waste, parks, cemeteries, you know, planning issue in the whole of Ingatestone and Fryning, according to their councillors, in 7 months.
Well, hopefully by talking on the radio, and also because there's going to be a feature in tomorrow's Gazette, if there are people out there that have actually written to councillors and haven't got any joy back, that perhaps they will sort of get in contact with either us here or the Gazette, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to find out if people have been in contact.
Well, it's just not possible that these people haven't been contacted at all. So, you know, what is happening here clearly is that people are contacting them, they're just not responding, or if they are responding individually to those emails or those knocks on the door or whatever, I'm afraid the councillor clearly hasn't done what one would imagine they've promised to do, which is to look into that particular resident issue, to pursue it and progress it through the proper channels. I mean, they haven't done it at all, because otherwise it would be recorded. So, and I'm not sure what's worse, ignoring residents or responding to them and pretending that you're dealing with it, and you're clearly not. And for those that are on zero, for the councillors like David T, Keith Parker, Sheila Murphy, Keith Sparling, Tony Sleep, John Kerslake, etc., that are on, you know, three, two, one cases in the last 7 months, it's some would say it's a dereliction of duty.
Definitely, is it? Well, I'm glad you brought it to everyone's attention. As I said, there's going to be a big feature tomorrow in the paper.
Yeah, the Gazette, as soon as I blogged on this last week, russellquirk.net, by the way, and the Gazette picked up on it, so did the Weekly News, so did the Inquirer. So, yeah, it certainly got some interest from the local media, and so it should. Mm. You know, don't forget, there's elections in 8 months' time.
Yeah.
And what will be happening is that these councillors, actually, particularly the ones that are really concerned about their seats, because, you know, as the political balance is swinging away from the Conservatives as it is, particularly locally, not just nationally, you know, these guys are going to be knocking on your door saying, can I have your vote, please?
Yeah.
And, you know, based on what? Based on what work ethic? Based on what track record? I mean, for some of these guys, I mean, the likes of William Lloyd, Karen Chilvers, Julie Morrissey, Mike Lesurve, Vicky Davis, etc., can hold their heads up high.
Yeah.
But some should hang their heads in shame.
Now, also, wanted to talk to you very quickly about the bedroom tax.
Yes.
So,
are you a supporter?
I don't. Well, the thing is, I don't know, because I don't receive any. I don't receive any benefits, and I've got a mortgage, and I'm struggling, and things are hard, and you know, you don't want to read everything in the papers about all these families that are getting mega money from the government to look after themselves while you have to go out to work. I don't believe there's loads of families that are in that situation of earning thousands and thousands of pounds a month for not working. I think it's all propaganda.
It's a very small percentage, and Daily Mail love those.
Yep.
Infinitesimal cases that make a good story.
So, I'd like to think that if you were in trouble, that you would be, if you had children, especially if you have children, that you should be able to get some help from the government. If you got made redundant or your partner's left you, and you can, you know, I'm not too sure, because if you're actually in a council property, and say you're 70 years old and you had a 3-bedroom council property, I'm not sure how it works, but I would expect somebody to probably move out of that property to let a family move in. So that's what I would think. If you're actually paying rent for somewhere but you don't own it, mm-hmm. and the council say, well, you've got 2 extra bedrooms there, I'm sorry, you've lived there for 30 years. Well, I'm sorry, I would personally think they would have to move and let a family move in if there was one person. Because it isn't their property. They've been given that property at the time they needed it.
And I think there's huge sympathy with that view, and that's where the government, the coalition government, are coming from in terms of trying to better manage housing stock, and I completely agree with that. I also agree that actually you shouldn't have a council house for life. So, you know, if you have a council house at the age of 23, let's say, but 15 years on you're earning £100,000 and driving around in a brand new Range Rover, should you be entitled to that subsidised taxpayer funded accommodation? The answer is no. So my view is that fixed term tenancies are the right thing to do. Doesn't mean at the end of your 5-year fixed term tenancy that you're going to be thrown out, because clearly if your circumstances are the same as they were, you'll stay as you are, and that's fine. The bedroom tax, I mean, I'm, you know, I suppose you could still, I am still a conservative at heart, so I have huge sympathy and support for a lot of, most of what the conservative led government do, but the bedroom tax I don't. And that the reason I don't is because, although I think the logic behind it is, as you've set out actually, is that, you know, you can't have, for instance, a person in a, again, council taxpayer funded property that's got 2 or 3 spare bedrooms when there's, as in the case of Brentwood, there's 3,000 people on the housing waiting list. So there's got to be a balance found. I totally accept that. But the problem is, this hasn't been thought through at all.
Mm.
A few weeks ago, I asked the head of housing at Brentwood Council to give me some figures. I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to see how many people in Brentwood are affected by the new rules, which came in very recently, in terms of them having to see a reduction in their housing benefit of £14 a week because they are deemed as having a spare bedroom. So I thought, let's find out that number. So I did. I'll come to it, don't worry. And then I keep you in suspense. And then I thought equally it would be interesting then to see how many available properties there are in Brentwood that are either owned by housing associations or the council itself, whereby those people that need to downsize based on them reducing or losing that benefit, how many properties there are available for them.
Yeah.
You know, because one would imagine that this whole scheme has been thought through, and that if there are X amount of people to suffer and that are going to have to move down to smaller properties, you would imagine that someone's done the numbers here to make sure that the resource is available whereby those people have enough in the way of properties to move into. But unfortunately, the answer to that little mathematical equation, that conundrum, is no. Here's the figures. The amount of people that are affected by the bedroom tax, as it's being called, are 177 people in Brentwood.
Yeah.
So there's 177 people in accommodation now, whereby they're either in three-bedroom accommodation only using two bedrooms, or they're in two-bedroom accommodation only using one. And therefore, you know, there needs to be this cascade, if you like, of people moving down from three bedrooms to two and two bedrooms down to one.
Yeah.
So, but the number, the amount of properties there are in Brentwood as one-bedroom properties that are available for those people to move down into,
yeah,
bearing in mind the 177 I've just mentioned, is the grand sum of seven.
Right. It'd be very cramped.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, it is quite, you know, it is quite an equation, isn't it? You know, I think, again, I said in my blog, russellquote.net, by the way, 177 into 7 doesn't go, and clearly it doesn't. So, you know, even if you accept the principle of managing social housing stock and making sure that there's no wasted bedrooms, and you know, if you support that principle, and again, I have great sympathy for it, you've got to at least come up with a scheme that is resourceable, that actually works, because otherwise it's a fait accompli. What you're saying to people is, you're in a two-bed flat, you're on your own, you've got to move down to something smaller, or we're going to take £14 a week of your housing benefit away from you. The guy or girl, whoever it might be, that says, well, okay, I'll move then. I'll move to something smaller up the road as a one-bedroom. What have you got? Well, the answer is going to be, well, nothing.
So not in this area. That's what it's going to be. You'll have areas like Brentwood is very affluent. You'll have, like, Mayfair. And then you'll have all these areas right on the outskirts where you'll have... That's what could happen, because if you haven't got the properties here, they could say, well, actually, we've not got nothing in Brentwood, but you can move out further to Thurrock or something. But you could
which
do...
Which is, you know... And that's a bit sinister, I think, Michelle.
I mean, it is. I mean, it's not, you know, if it was me and I had children and I had no partner or what, you know, or whatever, if you needed to have some benefits and they just said, well, actually, you've got to move out of the area.
You've got to move from Brentwood. You've got to move to Clacton.
But it's the kind of thing that they're generating at the moment. It's like a them and us. You work hard. You pay your taxes. Look at these people that do nothing.
Yeah.
And it's not that black and white, but that is what is being pushed to people, to make people go, well, why should they have something for nothing?
It's a blunt instrument. I think it's what governments and politicians do a lot of. Rather than coming up with solutions, they come up with headlines that they think, you know, particularly now we're on the downward trajectory towards a general election in 2015. Unofficially, the election campaign has started, believe me. So, you know, the Conservatives have pulled in people like Lyndon Crosby and so on to start managing their campaign, you know, in the run-up to May 2015. You know, and what they're doing, they're positioning. They're making sure that, you know, they're getting their existing Conservative voters on board, which is why you're seeing a lot of this stuff about immigration, where they're very questionably interviewing people at tube stations that happen not to be white and are asking them about their immigration status, but they're not questioning people, for instance, that, you know, could be from Russia or could be from Canada or New Zealand, for instance. So they're not stopping white people, they're just stopping, you know, Asian and black people, you know, and that is to appeal to a certain type of Conservative voter that might otherwise vote UKIP. That's exactly what that is about. The bedroom tax thing is about saying to what you've just said, really, the likes of Brentwood people, you see, but I suppose that you know, the majority of which, you know, work hard, pay tax and so on, and probably do resent a little bit someone that's lived in a council house for 25-30 years and so on. So it's all about pandering to the electorate, pandering to the central ground, which is where elections are won and lost. So, you know, it's all about headlines, messages and so on, rather than actual solutions. And I think, you know, the numbers that I've got here prove that this just hasn't been thought out, whether it be at Westminster level or at Brentwood level. There aren't enough properties.
Well, thank you very much for coming in today.
My pleasure.
You will be in the paper tomorrow.
Probably. and actually, there's something about me, for the wrong reasons as well. There's something about complaints about councillors that's going to be in there. And obviously, I feature normally quite regularly in terms of complaints, because it's a bit of a... This political thing is obviously quite a cut and thrust. And it's, you know, it's the old, you know, you don't make an omelette without breaking any eggs type thing. So I think I'm in there amongst some others. There's be a bit of a rundown of the complaints that have been made from councillors and goodness knows what, and members of the public about us elected members. So that will be in there too. So, I think it'll be quite a busy week, not just in the Gazette but the other local papers too, for what should be a quiet, what they call silly season, but there's a fair bit going on
now. If people want to find out more, they can go to
They can look at my blog, which I'll say again if I may, russellquirk.net. They can look at the Brentwood First Facebook page, which is Facebook /BWD First. We're on Twitter as well, which is the same, BWD First. And the website for Brentwood First is being constructed as we speak, so that'll be up, that'll be brentwoodfirst.com very soon.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you very much, Russell. It's always a pleasure to have you in the studio, and you'll hopefully be back in with Mike in a couple of weeks.
Yes, hope so. Thanks for having
me. And as I said before, if you are from any of the other political parties we've mentioned during the show, you are welcome to come on to the shows and, come in and have a chat. Russell, you make use of the local radio station. You come in and you talk on air. Mike Lesurf comes in and talks on air. Make an effort to actually come in. We don't refuse anybody here. We're happy to talk to all of you.
Maybe ask the bottom five councillors on my list here, the ones that are on zero. Ask them to come in.
Roger
McShane, Alan Bray, Claire Cornell, Madeline Henwood, Noah Hens, come in and tell the public why you've registered no items for casework this year.
Yeah, there we go. The offer's there. The handshake, the friendly handshake. Right, 11:55, thanks very much to Russell. I'll be back with you after this.
Community Radio for Brentwood and Billericay.